Accession number 31693, reel 22.
Mr. Robson, reel 22. You were talking about Griffiths being killed, and there were other men, I think.
One we lost in the training, and he got swept away in a river, in a flood, and got caught in the roots of a tree, which was in the river. And his weapon got stuck, and poor lad drowned. That was our train. So we had that even before we went on to operations. And then while we're on operations, we lost another lad, another tragic accident, when he fell out of a window when he was on R&R in Kuching. He fell out of a window and was killed. So it was really, we lost three, but only one through direct enemy action. Obviously, there was other accidents. We had other casualties, casualty evacuations through leprospirosis, which was quite a bad disease. It was passed on by rats in the water. So yes, there was always something happening. There were a few who actually just not, which is normal accidents, you know, I would say. But only the serious ones were actually casualty. And I must admit, the helicopter pilots that we had bringing in those aircraft and taking the casualty evacuation were very, very good. But they weren't RAF, they were Army Air Corps pilots, and we had one or two down at battalion headquarters, because the RSM, he used to do all the missions. He was in control of all the missions of the helicopters and everything that was supplied to us all went through the RSM, what they call Flory Ford. And he was an all-time soldier, and he had a cracking job, and he was good, although very, very, as an RSM, he was very regimental, but he was a good laugh.
So we're really coming, I think, about an end of Borneo, are we?
It's
about Borneo.
Not a lot, apart from when we were coming to the end of our tour in Borneo. We were handing over to the 1st Battalion of the Royal New Zealand Regiment, which was our close attachment to the Durham Light Infantry, and they took over from us. And it was a laugh at the time, because a lot of them were Maoris, and they were big lads. Where we could get seven in a helicopter, the New Zealanders could only get five, because they were big, big lads. And we had, of course, we had our farewells with them. And then we actually came out of the, when we actually finished with our tour, because I was the signals, I stayed there until the latter end of our tour. We were the last company out of our positions. And we were helicoptered out. I can't remember where we were picked up from. Obviously, we were picked up from Plum and Mapau, but we were picked up by Belvedere, which was a twin engined, which was the work part. The helicopters we've got now in service in the British Army, the Jolly Green Dragons, the Belvederes were big, but nowhere in the same size as what we've got now. And we were actually helicoptered out, taken to a road, I don't know where it was, where we were picked up by truck. and then taken from there all the way down to Kuching, where we met up with the rest of the battalion who were in the troop ship. There was a little bit of a delay leaving Kuching, because the companies that had got on the ship before us had drank all the beer ration. So to save trouble, otherwise there'd have been no beer for B Company for the trip over to Singapore. We had to delay the sailing of the ship to the following day to get extra nappy rations, to get some beer on board. Otherwise, I think there would have been mutiny.
What day did you leave?
I would say it would be exact date. I can't remember. It was somewhere the end of May. I would think round about 14th of May.
66, 7.
That would be 66, because we sailed from Kuching on the early morning. Because I remember waking up the next morning and watching the ship sailing out of Kuching. Can't remember much about them because they relaxed the beer rule. And everybody had a fairly big hangover that morning. We all had, to be perfectly honest, quite a few beers that night, because that was the first really relaxing night in almost 9 months. Certainly 8 months while we were in Borneo. And then we sailed to Singapore, where we were given our civilian equipment, which was left in Kuching at that time. We married up with that, got our de-kitted. We also had checks, obviously medical checks, make sure everyone was all right. And a couple of games of football. The first time that the battalion team had played football together since the start of our operations in Borneo. And we're in Nee Soon camp in Singapore for about 10 days while we're
decked. Is that on the island or the mainland?
This was in Nee Soon camp. I'm sure Nee Soon is in Singapore. It was in Singapore. And we're there for 10 days relaxing. And played, say, the battalion football team got together again. We were fit, but not football fit. We weren't at our best, put it that way, as a battalion football team. And one of the few times that the battalion football team had ever been beaten, mainly because we hadn't played together for months. But yes, it was a relaxing time. Everybody. We got out and about, went to see what Raffles was like, the Raffles Hotel. The battalion was, things were very, very relaxed and just chilling out prior to us coming home.
No problems with over exuberance, you know, after leaving the jungle and.
Nobody. There was nothing serious happened. Yes, there was guys got drunk, and there may have been incidents, but everything was kept low key anyway. So, which was pretty good. I mean, Colonel Morn, I must admit, kept it very, very low key, very, very low key. We just de-kitted, got sorted out. The funny part about being in the jungle is you would go out on a patrol, and when you were out on patrol, you may have had a lovely tan on you, but you lose the tan very, very quickly. And then when you were back in the base, if you got the chance, because there was always small jobs to be done, so you managed to get your tan on again. And then in the 10 days in Singapore, because it was so relaxed, we were able to get our top up our tan, what we had, because remembering that we'd been out in the Far East since 1963, and we're now 66, nearly 3 years, which is one of the longest tours any regiment had ever had in the Far East. We were nearly 3 years out there, so 3 years since we'd been back to the UK.
So what happened to you then after the 10-day period that you were there?
10 days, we all had we were in civvies. We were given our flight details, and of course we wrote letters and everything else, and we flew by charter aircraft. And we got back to if I remember, it would be the old Heathrow. I'm sure it was old Heathrow. So you're talking 1966 Heathrow, which wasn't as huge as it is now, but it was still the main airport. Coming into the UK. So we got into the UK, and customs were there. I always remember that. Customs were there. Everybody was searched. Everything was emptied. We'd just come from a wartime or a war footing. I don't know what the customs were looking for. But anyway, we got onto coaches at Heathrow Airport, and we set off for Colchester. And once we got into Colchester, we were paid. We got all our money, which would, remembering that we'd all, there was nothing to spend on while we were there. So yes, we're all quite flush with cash. And my family was in old type barracks or quarters, and I didn't know where I was living. So there was people being taken, and we were being taken to on coaches. People were going on coaches to go on leave, and we were given 2 months leave. And I was met by my family at that time, the two boys and my wife, and it was just prior to the 66 World Cup, which was absolutely superb, and we had 2 months leave. And I remember going out and buying a car, because I had no transport, and then travelling up after the World Cup. We travelled up to the northeast for a couple of weeks to meet my mother and stay with my mother and relatives. So we had a few parties, shall I say, when we got back. But I think the biggest party we had, of course, was the World Cup. Seeing England beat Germany, it was absolutely superb. And because we'd never had any television at all the time, although we used to see a couple of films, there was no television. And of course, getting back and watching the television, even in those days. And one of the big things which we laughed about now is the miniskirts. This is the height of the fashion then. I would never seen it. And the number of guys who were walking down the street and seeing miniskirts and turning around and bumping into lampposts. It was absolutely brilliant. But the only thing, of course, was another thing was cars backfiring. If a car backfired, guys were actually diving into shop doorways. Because there was still that little bit of tension there.
Yes.
And when we did get back, I can't remember if everybody went on leave at the same time. Can't remember it though, it could be when the battalion came back off the leave. People found it hard to settle into normal life again, and I know that there was a few occasions where there was trouble in Colchester, the garrison town, and I can always remember that the CEO got us all together and read an article out of a paper, the local Essex paper, and that the editor had actually said to the people, you've got to remember that these lads had been on a tour of duty in Borneo for 9 months, 8 or 9 months, and actually they are blown off the steam. You can't expect people to suddenly come from wartime, as it was, into a peaceful and then just fit in easily. People need to remember that they've got to let off steam, and this is exactly what happened, and this is what I always remember that. And of course I wasn't there in Colchester all that long, and I went on my 2 year tour or 2 year detachment to the School of Infantry at Warminster. So that was my finish really with the Durham Light Infantry.
And you were at Warminster two years, and what was that? What were your responsibilities there?
It was the School of Infantry at Warminster was the advanced training for officers coming out of Warminster, coming out of Sandhurst. They would then come to Warminster, and we as signallers, all we did was supplied the communications for going out and exercises with them, and there was all, so there was a what they call a platoon commander's division. So it was their advanced training really from Sandhurst to learn to become a platoon commander, and it was just taking forward their training, and we as signallers used to supply the communications. And it was a little bit different to battalion communications, because we also used to set up on the training planes of Warminster, you had Imber Village, and we were taken through platoon fighting in built-up areas. It's called FIBUA, fighting in built-up areas, where they teach these platoon commanders how to take a platoon through that, and we would set up various scenarios with communications, and on a night time, when they did night time communications, we would we had all tapes of various scenarios, like Russian martial music and bombs going off, and we used to go out and set them up in the little areas with the loudspeakers, and we would be in hiding. And me and another guy, we'd be doing this, but we'd work off a script, and we'd have another signaller with the instructors. And they would tell us when to start certain things, and it has been known, because remembering that it wasn't just the Sandhurst and the British Army, we had a lot of Commonwealth officers, and they had never been through this. And during the winter, it was quite hard for these guys. And it has been known for when we started off these communications, like the rush of martial music and explosions and everything. It was quite scary for these people at night. And it was one officer ran back to the camp, which was about 2 miles, 3 miles away, back into Warminster camp. We also had the senior officers, senior captains and majors who would go on to, they had to pass a course to go on to become colonels. And what we'd do, we'd set up we'd have two or three big bivouacs, and we'd set up communications, the radios and everything else, and we would observe and help senior officers while they were learning how to command. And it was while I was at Warminster I got my promotion again. And the first officer I worked with was a guy from the Green Howards, because every guy there was from different battalions and different regiments from the British Army. We all worked together.
What was his name?
Captain Halliday was from the Green Howards. When I first met him, we became, I made a name for myself. And then he didn't actually promote me, though. It was a guy called Captain Kendall, who was ex-KYLI. He actually called me up and asked if I'd take promotion. And I said I'd only take promotion if I was fully substantive straight away. Because I'd been promoted before, I got that. We had a colour sergeant who was from the Surrey Regiment, Norman Oxborough. Still remember him to this day. And then we had a sergeant from the King's Regiment, Sergeant Peduzzi, another good guy. And we had a corporal, Whiffen, from the Royal Signals. These people, I had 2 years with them, and we worked together, and so it was brilliant. But I played football as well, and I played football there for 2 years. I mean, it was classed as a minor unit, and some of the guys I played football with were ex-army footballers. And we were actually the minor units champions while I was there at football. And the platoon I was with, the Signals, we won the Signals football. So yes, it was quite successful. So when you weren't working, you was doing sports, because the courses weren't run continuously. Yes, we worked long hours, but we had a lot of time off as well. I mean, nobody mourned. I mean, if we had to work till 1 o'clock in the morning, we worked till 1 o'clock in the morning. It was all dependent on the program of the platoon commander's division, and also on the seniors. So I had a good 2 years, and whilst I was there with Captain Kendall, who promoted me again, I had the pleasure of meeting Field Marshal Lord Hardinge. Lord Templar. It was during the Vietnam War. We were asked to go up to the Field Marshal Lord Templar's house and tape his views on what the Americans were doing wrong in Vietnam. And again, this was not to be broadcast at the time because it was we were supposed to be neutral in Vietnam. Anyway, we Captain Kendall and myself, we actually went up to London to Field Marshal Lord Templar's house, and I'd never met a Field Marshal Lord Templar before. I didn't know who he was. Certainly the highest ranking officer I've ever met, and I never even got into the house. I unloaded the Land Rover at the front of the house. It was taken in, the equipment that was set up, because the officer knew how to set it up. I'd showed him how to do it anyway, and if he had any problems, then that was the only time I was allowed to go in Field Marshal Lord Templar's house. And while I was waiting, out of the door opened, I was parked about 20 yards down the road, and this old gent came out of the house, and with a cup of tea and some sandwiches, and I didn't know who it was. I thought it was a butler until he introduced himself. That was Field Marshal Lord Templar. And he brought me a cup of tea and sandwiches. Many years later, Captain Kendall joined the 1st Battalion of the Light Infantry, who I was serving with at that time, and I was a full corporal, and I was on duty in the communications room, and he just arrived as a company commander, and Colonel Barry Lane, at the time, who was one of my battalion commander, and when Major Kendall at that time now spotted me, he hadn't realised I was there, and said to Colonel Lane, "I bet you haven't been waited on by a field marshal." And he says, "What do you mean?" He says, "He has," pointing to me. So this is things which stick in your mind. So after that, Colonel Lane used to always tell me, "Would you like a cup of tea?" He says, if you can be waited on by a field marshal, then you certainly be waited on by a colonel. But yeah, it's things like that, you know. Bad things you don't remember. The good times you do remember.
Was your family with you at Warminster?
Yes, it was. Do you know, it was the best quarters I've ever had in the British Army.
I was going to ask you about what the accommodation was like.
I went down there first. They were revamping the whole of Warminster at that time, and we stayed in, not the family, but that time, because I was on my own. I was in a place called New Camp, and it was all wartime Nissen huts, and we were there for only a short while, and travelling up into Warminster, which about, I would say, about 5 miles, and we were travelling there to work in the morning. And when my family joined me, I moved into a brand new quarter, which was absolutely superb. And G-plan furniture, there was everything I wanted in that quarter. Nice little garden, a garage for my car. I mean, I'd never seen this before, and they were happy there, the kids were happy there, the two boys, and we had two great years, because the security wasn't kept by the soldiers. It was, and the camp was open. I mean, there was no fence around it, which is amazing, really, in those days in 66. because we still had the IRA threat.